Willie and D-Mace continuing here on 102.5 The Game. Our call and text line is driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll activate that here pretty soon. And don't forget, be listening during the noon hour. Steven Stamkos is going to join us. He's in Nashville for the first time since signing with the Predators earlier this month. A very exciting move for the franchise, and we will catch up with him later. But you hear the beginnings of the Rocky Top starting there. Tennessee is at the podium. They are front and center stage right now down in Dallas at SEC Media Days. Chad Withrow joins us from Hot Mike and Hutton and Withrow. With Hutton and Withrow, you hear Jonathan Hutton joining us every Wednesday on the show. Chad joins Jared all the time on his show in the afternoon, but we wanted to get Chad's perspective right after Tennessee had Josh Heupel at the podium. And Chad, the first thing that jumped out at me is how many Oklahoma media wanted to get nostalgic and ask Josh a question.
Yeah, I mean, Willie, first off, thanks for having me on. Always great getting a chance to chat with you. You could label this Texas and Oklahoma media days.
You're right. They've got the numbers down there.
Texas people. I mean, this is they're really sandbagging over there in Texas to host the event there. And then every coach is getting about three or four questions about how important it is for Texas to join the conference and getting a bunch of Longhorn questions. And then Josh Heupel's obviously going to get all those Oklahoma questions, which I love watching Josh Heupel in any media setting because it's clear he's annoyed by all of it. But he does his best to kind of soldier on and gave a bunch of quick responses when it came to Oklahoma. But look, the SEC schedule makers, they know what they're doing. And for Oklahoma to be welcomed into the SEC with Josh Heupel returning to Norman, a place where he starred as a quarterback, and a place that fired him unceremoniously, where he felt like he didn't deserve to be fired, and now he comes back as the head coach of Tennessee. There's a lot of drama and a lot of intrigue with that game. So I certainly understand the questions.
Yeah, the questions that I heard anyway didn't really center as much in on the firing, much more him quarterbacking them to the national title, which is a much more fun memory, I think, for everybody involved. But, Chad, I definitely get that vibe with just where it is, especially with Texas. There was a question asked about, you know, Texas coming into the SEC and what is that bringing to the table? And Kirby Smart completely pivoted and just said every game in the SEC is against the team. I mean, you know, you see what he was saying. He was basically trying to take the Texas thing and knock it down a peg. Like, I know there's a lot of tradition in Texas and in Oklahoma, the brand and everything, but you're joining a league that has got way more up and down the lineup than the league that they're leaving.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the point that I keep coming back to and that all these coaches are trying to make, some of them have said it more bluntly than others, Willie, but there are a number of Texases in the SEC that they're walking into.
Right.
You know, Nick Saban, who I think has been great on SEC Network so far
awesome.
This week in ESPN, he said yesterday, you know, he's laughing at all of these questions about how Texas ran things in their previous conference. He said, well, there's a lot of egos and a lot of power brokers in this conference. They're not going to run anything in the SEC. And he's talking about the political environment with Texas, the Longhorn Network. And it's one of the reasons that Nebraska left for the Big Ten when they did, because they thought that Texas ran the Big 12 and they had way too much power. Well, they're ceding a lot of that power to go to the SEC and be one of the 16 members of the SEC. So I totally understand what Nick Saban is saying when it comes to that. But you look around the conference and suddenly you go from a situation where Texas and Oklahoma were clearly, you know, 1 and 1A in that conference in terms of brand awareness, power, history, everything. And now you step into it and you look around and you've got Alabama, you've got Georgia and what Kirby Smart's doing. You've got Florida, who's always, even when they're down, is a sleeping giant. You got Tennessee that's won multiple national championships. There are a lot of Texases and Oklahomas in the SEC, and I'm not one that thinks that just because they're joining the SEC, they're going to take a big step down. I present to you Exhibit A, Gary Pinkle in Missouri, who stepped into the SEC and went to Atlanta the first 2 years and won the SEC East, so it is possible to step in and have immediate success. But now Texas is one of a number of elite programs and not just the top dog that they enjoyed while being in the Big 12.
Yeah, and Missouri's got a pretty good team this year, too. Chad Withrow is with us. So, Chad, tell me where Tennessee fits in this. I heard Josh Heupel say he feels like his depth is the best that it's been since he's been there. We've been hearing about Nico Iamaleava for all this time since he was high school and NIL started. There was a huge story that sort of gravitated his way well before he ever stepped on campus, but he looks really good. He's ready to take over the reins. So tell me where you see Tennessee in this new SEC.
Yeah, that is the million-dollar question, Willie. And I like to talk about ceilings and floors with programs. I really thought going into last year that the hope, if you're a Tennessee fan, is that season would kind of establish the floor under Josh Heupel, because you lose Hendon Hooker, who was the perfect quarterback, a transformational guy for Josh Heupel, perfect quarterback for that system, with his ability to run at a fast pace within the offense and his scrambling ability. And you saw Tennessee, a team that with their finish, you know, they win 11 games and they win the bowl game over Clemson. That would have been good enough to have them in a 12-team playoff, right? So if that's the ceiling, then Tennessee is a possible playoff team when they get the quarterback right, when they have the roster right. That's what the ceiling could be under Josh Heupel. I think last year going 8-4 in the regular season and winning a bowl game, if that's the floor, and I'm saying the other is the ceiling, that's a pretty good floor for Tennessee to have 8 or 9 wins to be the floor, because Joe Milton was not the right guy for that offense. He's not the perfect quarterback for Josh Heupel. Nico Iamaleava is the perfect quarterback for Josh Heupel. If you were going to design a quarterback from scratch on EA Sports, the new college football game, and put them in Josh Heupel's offense, it is a tall, long, quick twitch athlete like Nico Iamaleava. That's what he wants at quarterback at Tennessee in his offense. So to me, the whole season rests on Nico's shoulders. Because if he goes down, they've got a former walk-on backing him up.
Okay, now I'm going to stop the interview for 1 second, and D-Mace has got questions, but have we used our quota of being able to say Nico's last name enough to now we just call him
Nico
the rest of the way? I feel like you should qualify yourself to show that you can say it. I still got to practice it a little bit more because I don't know if I've got it quite right yet, but every question in the scrum is, hey, what about Nico? What about Nico? Nobody dares to say it. But we need to say it, right? We got to say it a couple times.
I think, Willie, we've reached the three mention quota.
I think three is about right.
It three times already.
Let's just all go into the understanding he's now Nico.
Exactly.
Okay. Everybody knows who we're talking about.
Nico without a last name. Let's do it that way.
Everyone in the SEC knows exactly who Nico is, so we can just go with Nico from here on out. I'm totally good with that. Mm. But, yeah, I think a sleeper part of the Tennessee team, and I'm anxious to hear from D-Mace on this, but I really think their defense has a chance to be really good. And that's been a change because that's been the clear weak link. And that's kind of a byproduct of this offense. You know, your defense is always going to struggle a little bit more because of how they play offense under Josh Heupel and how fast they're playing. But I think this defensive line has a chance to be the best in the SEC. I think if the transfers, Jermod McCoy from Oregon State, Jalen McMurray from Temple, Jacoby Thomas from MTSU, if those guys come in and start and are difference makers in the secondary that really struggled a year ago, I think Tennessee's got a chance to be surprisingly really good on defense this year, which could be a game changer for them.
We'll talk with Chad Withrow, Hot Mike Withrow, and Hutton Withrow, whichever way you want to put it. And that's what I was going to ask you, Chad, the strength of this team. We know, you know, for the longest, it's been the offensive side of the ball. Now, they've had some great defensive players come through that university, but the last couple of years, they have been known more for the offense rather than the defense. But is that strength the defensive line, or do you believe it's going to be the secondary, which enhances the defensive line?
You know, I really think, D-Mace, it's going to be the defensive line. And by the way, it should be Withrow and Hutton. I don't know why it's Hutton. Someone really screwed that up with the title of the show. But so for the purpose of this interview, we'll go with Withrow and Hutton. Mm-hmm. That sounds better. The defensive line is really good. And I think this is a great case study in how to use NIL funds. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is this. Amari Thomas, who's there today, I think he's in his sixth year at Tennessee, fifth or sixth year. He could have gone pro and probably been a mid-round draft pick. But what Tennessee's been able to do is get a lot of guys who could have been a mid- to late-round draft pick or maybe an undrafted free agent to come back with NIL resources and be a really old defensive lineman in the SEC. And that is an amazing asset to possess, to have lines that are that old, that mature, that have played the SEC that long is a real boom for Tennessee. So you look at that, you look at the fact that, you know, James Pierce might be the best pass rusher in college football and could be a top five pick in the NFL draft. I mean, across the board, that defensive line, to your question, D-Mace, that defensive line is going to make that secondary look better. Mm-hmm. Because Pierce is going to get a lot of double teams. It's going to open it up for everyone else. I think Amari Thomas is a great disruptor in the interior of the defensive line. That's where I think the strength of this defense lies. They got Keenan Pilley coming back, the transfer from BYU. He played in about the first half, I think, against Virginia before his season ended with an injury. He's going to be a leader. He's, I think, 25, 26 years old after his Mormon mission trip. Tennessee's got a very old defense that has a chance to be really good, and that's something we haven't seen under Josh Heupel yet.
Now, Chad, looking at the way that the college football playoffs are structured now, Will and I was talking about this because I was listening to SEC Media Days this morning, and Paul and Mina Hines was on, and they were talking about Texas and the depth that Texas have. They went to a practice, and Texas was running two or three, four scrimmages offensively and defensively. Is it going to be critical now that the new format has changed, college football playoffs, that teams retain their players to build depth? Because no longer is it 13 games and plus two, it's 13 games and plus four. And if you don't win your championship, you get sent back to the end of the line and you got to play four straight games, you know, in order to win a championship. So is it going to be a little bit harder for teams based upon, you know, the depth of each individual roster? Is it a little bit easier to make it or harder, you think?
I think it's the hardest thing to do in college football right now is to convince players that are former four or even high three-star players to stick with it when they're not a starter or they're not currently in a two-deep and to stay with the program. And, yes, it is imperative for depth that you have guys that are willing to wait a couple years to see a lot of playing time. And if you can facilitate that within your program and you got the magic formula to do that, then I think you're going to have a lot of success. But what we're seeing is more of what Ole Miss does with Lane Kiffin, where they're just replenishing their starting lineup every year with transfers. They're going into the portal and saying, hey, if we have to completely change out our entire defensive line, we'll do it through the portal. If we need to change out three or four offensive linemen in the portal, we're going to do it next year. The hard part is if you're on the let's say you're the third offensive guard at Ole Miss, convincing the third offensive guard at Ole Miss to come back for his sophomore year where he has a chance to be the second offensive guard and then to come back his junior year where he might be the starting offensive guard, that's tough in today's college football environment. So, yes, I think depth is very important, obviously, for every team. But how you hold on to that depth with players that have been in your program that know the system and convincing them to stay is really, really difficult, especially when you can just go the Ole Miss route and completely replenish your roster each and every year and go big into the portal with some big money, big name guys and bring in an immediate starter. Guys aren't going to stick around for that within program. So finding the right balance is going to be key for everyone in the SEC.
We've seen it with the older teams mm-hmm. in baseball and basketball. There's an asset, right, to have guys who are 22, 23. I don't care how good your freshmen are.
Yeah,
when you're four or 5 years younger, and it'll be a little different when the COVID guys finally go. You mentioned these six-year guys.
This should be the last year.
This is the last year. Thank goodness.
And girls.
Yeah, because that was unfair to everybody, I think, except for that class or those two classes. But finally, you will get a little bit younger. But I see the strategy by Lane Kiffin. Here's the question, Chad, is can you sustain it year after year? If that's your angle, right? I'm gonna go fill my holes from the portal every year with money.
I don't think you can sustain it. I think it's really tough. Maybe Lane Kiffin is one of those coaches that can make it work, Willie. But I think finding the right balance, like you can't sustain going all in on either one. You can't be Dabo Swinney and decide to not utilize the portal at all and think that everyone's going to stay because you're God's gift to coaching and you're Clemson and they can't go on visits and they're not going to get lured in by other programs. You can't go about it thinking that way. And you also can't think, hey, I'm just going to go into the portal and get someone better. I don't think the Deion Sanders approach is going to work either. Now, we'll see. But I don't think you can just completely turn over your roster every year and think that it's going to work out. You got to have some guys that stay. So if Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss is on the high end of portal, and Deion Sanders and Coach Prime is on the high end of that portal, and Clemson's on the other end of that spectrum, it's the programs that are able, for SEC purposes. I looked at this earlier today. I think Tennessee has the 13th best recruiting class in the nation for next year. Guys, that's sixth best in the SEC, and they're top 13 in the country, right? So if you are going to compete in the SEC, you have to be a top 10 or top 15 national recruiting program mixed with the ability to get high-end, top-level talent to come in and fill an immediate need in the portal. I think the better you are at retaining talent and getting talent out of high school, the less of a need it is to go into the portal and bring in an immediate starter. I think Georgia's a good example. You know, they go and get Dominic Lovett and Ra-Ra Thomas, two SEC receivers that can come in and immediately play a role on Georgia's team. They didn't have to have it because they recruit so well out of high school, but they needed it and they got it. To me, that's the right formula if you can find it. But, you know, frankly speaking, how many programs are able to do that?
Yeah, and you didn't even mention London Humphreys, who they did the same thing with Vanderbilt. And London Humphreys, unbelievable year as a true freshman, a young true freshman, who could have been a senior in high school last year. I'm curious where that all shakes out for him, just individually, just watching it unfold locally here.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably, you know, if I'm being completely honest, and that's going back to this whole Texas-Oklahoma thing coming into the conference, who does that really benefit? Well, it benefits the money and the eyeballs that are going to be watching the SEC for sure. But does that help Vanderbilt? Does it help Mississippi State? Does it help Arkansas? Does it help a number of programs that maybe traditionally have struggled a little bit more than others? I don't think that it does. What it does is it crowds a room of, I'm going to go to maybe seven or eight programs right now that I think legitimately could possibly pull off that feat of recruiting at a high enough level and bringing in top-level transfers to compete for a college football playoff spot or national title. Missouri's one you brought up, Willie. That's a great example. Is Missouri here to stay, or are we just watching the end of all of their old guys cycle through the process with Eli, and then it's going to go right back to being in the middle of the pack or below in the SEC? A lot of big question marks with the state of college football right now, but especially in the SEC, with all of those teams capable of competing for a national title and all of those teams vying for multiple spots in that 12-team playoff.
Now, where does Tennessee fit in all this? Because, you know, we're talking about depth of teams, and we're talking, you know, NIL and portal and all that other stuff. But where does UT fit in the big scheme of things as far as the SEC and ultimately, you know, getting into the playoffs?
I think because they've got such an active collective with Spire Sports and the Vol Club, and they've clearly done a good job with that, D-Mace. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they're in the back end of that group that could win a national title, but not at the front end. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we're going down the pecking order right now in the SEC, it's Georgia, it's Alabama, even without Nick Saban. LSU's always going to be in there because of their in-state recruiting. Texas and Oklahoma, you now throw into that mix also. Florida's another one that, because of their local talent, is going to be in that mix if they figure things out with their head coach. And I think Tennessee's kind of on the back end of that. Auburn's another one you can throw in, but that's always tough competing in-state with Alabama. So if you're going to cut the SEC in half, I think Tennessee as a program and their ability to compete for an SEC and national championship is right around that halfway point of the SEC. And if you're in the top half of the conference, you're going to have a chance. So I put Tennessee, just if we're going eternal pecking order right now and moving forward with resources and everything else, they're top half of the SEC, but they're not top of the top half of the SEC, like Georgia, Alabama, Texas now also.
Okay, so let's wrap it up with this, Chad. All things that you just mentioned, right, in this new world where this has all happened in a matter of 2 or 3 years, NIL, transfer, Texas, Oklahoma coming in, expanded playoff. We know Tennessee can win a national title because they've done it in 1998. And for a long time, they were a contender for maybe 10 years. They were right in the mix then before they kind of leveled off. So do you think their status, their chances of winning a title are greater, lesser, or the same with this new world as they were in the old world?
That's a great question. I think it's greater right now because, and Nick Saban's a great example of this, when Nick Saban is outwardly talking about something being a problem for college football like he was at the very end of it, yes, I do think that he thinks it's a problem for college football writ large. I also believe he thinks it's a problem for Alabama because I do think that Nick Saban started to see a bit of a leveling out of what other programs could accomplish because of NIL. I think Tennessee and Texas A&M are two of those, right? He was outwardly complaining about Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M that caused the big stir, but I do think that with an active NIL program and with, you know, Josh Heupel, it wasn't the case last year that they leveled off after the great year, but the year before that, Tennessee was one of those hot programs because of the offense, because of how fast they played. So if you can remain in the mix to be a hot program and you score points the way Josh Heupel and Tennessee does, I think that their chances of being nationally relevant year in and year out are greater because of the current flux of college football. But that is certainly not the case for every program. I know Clark Lee talked about it at Vanderbilt. London Humphrey is a great example of that, Willie. Like, there are other programs who are going to struggle in this current wild, wild west environment.
Chad, thanks for joining us. Great stuff, as always. And we'll check in with you down the road. And we got your partner. We'll ask him about the title
Withrow
of the
Hutton.
Show. We're going to propose a switch of the title.
I've got a huge ego, as you guys know. Every week. So just when he comes on, just make sure you call it Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow.
Okay.
But when I join you again, it's Hot Mike with Withrow and Hutton.
You got it. All right. We can do that. All right, Chad. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yep.
Good stuff. Chad Withrow, hopefully that got some discussion going. We'd love to hear your opinion. Is Tennessee in a better position in this new world than they've ever been before about winning a national title in college football? Text us, 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, or call us. Either way, and don't forget, next hour, Stephen Stamkos, Nashville Predators. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more here on 102.5 The Game.